This is Inspired, where we explore the beliefs shaping our world. I'm your host, Amber Khan. This week, we are exploring how faith leaders are finding meaning in the midst of a pandemic.
We are in a moment that we have to exercise the disciplines of our traditions to the best of our ability in the ways that will actually live out, for the Christian tradition at least, the mandate to love one another.
That is Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch. He has a long history of interfaith work, social justice activism, and religion journalism. In addition to being an ordained Baptist minister, he was the founding editor of Huffington Post's religion section and often comments on faith matters for CNN, MSNBC, and others. Today, he's the senior advisor for public affairs and innovation at the Interfaith Youth Corps, a national organization dedicated to diversity and religious cooperation. In a recent editorial published in the Religion News Service, Paul reflected on the meaning of sacrifice in the midst of a pandemic during the Lenten season, which in the West ends on Easter Sunday, April 12th. We began our conversation with this question. What advice is he offering those who are struggling with the call to remain distant?
We are not just to love those closest to us. We are to love the neighbor and the neighbor that we do not yet know. It is a time when we have to discipline sometimes not to do things. There will be a moment when we need to show up and be brave for one another. And, you know, there are many, many people who are sacrificing their own health to serve in their roles as nurses and doctors and technicians. And all of that is actually a way to show love for people who, you know, they don't know, but that is what they're called to do in this time. Others of us are the idea of loving one another means not being near them. So we have to think about, like, what does it mean to, you know, to love one another, to be with one another in a different way? And so it, in some ways, the act of sacrifice in this moment can mean maintaining social distance, but it does not mean that we can't be with one another. We can congregate, we can be with one another, and finding other ways to show our love, show our solidarity, using the technologies that we have, and recognizing that sometimes we are called to act and sometimes we are called to stay back. And this is a time when we have to be discerning about how to exercise the spiritual discipline of love and sacrifice for one another, which is at the core of the Christian faith.
I want to ask you about isolation. How can isolation be a spiritual practice from your point of view?
I like the question because I think it opens up a possibility that in this moment when we have to be hyper-connected and we have to go, 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 what are the opportunities in this moment to do some very concerted self-reflection about what it means for us, each of us, to be human right now? What is our desire? Who do we want to be in the world? How can we practice prayer, meditation, sending love to one another, loving ourselves in the moment, taking care of ourselves? If we have the space right now and perhaps some fewer emails that we might need to answer, is it possible for us to take some time to not just go, go, go? And I think it is an invitation for all of us to make sure that we are focused and are headed in the direction that we want to go to, that we are all thinking about our communities and our nation and our world and the most loving and just societies that can be responsive in this crisis. I like the idea of all of us being kind of monastics for a little bit in that sense of isolation, but also recognizing that even monastics have a community in which they participate, in which everyone has their own role to play, and so that it's not an either or for us.
The comfort of having others around us, as we practice this is the Lenten season, what can that experience teach Christians about Lent? What lessons can be drawn from that?
You know, Lent starts with this idea that, you know, remember you are dust and to dust you will return. It's meant to startle you out of your normal routine and to reflect on the fragility of life, you know, that that our physical presence is not all there is, that our spiritual lives matter. Lent is really a time to look around the world with new eyes, prioritize your life so that you are living the life you're meant to live in accordance with a divine invitation to be part of a beloved community. This, almost inflicted Lenten moment for us allows us to recognize that the crucifixion is real, that there is death and there is destruction and there is oppression and there is, you know, terrible cruelty that is happening all the time. In some ways, unfortunately, this virus is exposing many of the deepest problems of our world. And yet, when we think about Jesus giving this last commandment, we are to love one another, and the crucifixion will happen, but there is always the sense that we are to live in the promise of life. We are to live as resurrection people. We are to live in as a people that is are bringing life where there is death.
You're using that word crucifixion in almost a poetic way, and I want to make sure I understand what you're talking about.
For me, it is used in a poetic way, which doesn't diminish its power. It is actually as real as anything. We see crucifixions as they happen all around us with the suffering of beloved people who are torn down and put down. And so it is poetic, but it's also extremely instructive for those of us who also recognize that when Jesus died on the cross, it's an intense solidarity with exactly those people who are being torn down, who are feeling sick, who are feeling neglected and oppressed, who are broken, who are needing, who are feeling forsaken. I mean, Jesus on the cross said, "God, why have you forsaken me?" It's one of the most forlorn moments, and recognizing that this, the one who we believe is the Son of God, the divine incarnate, would say, "Why have you forsaken me, God?" recognizes that there is this suffering in the world, and we are to be compassionate with others.
At the time of our conversation, there were a growing number of Christian churches making headlines as they dismissed the public health call to remain physically distant. Some suggested it was a partisan hoax, echoing the president from January, or that it was an attack on religion. I asked Paul to react to those news stories.
Well, first of all, there has been an extraordinary response that I've never even could have anticipated, which was the Catholic Church responded, canceling all masses. The majority of the Christian churches, Jewish, Muslim, everyone has been, I think, in very good faith, I will call it, trying to respond to this moment. The move online for many of them was hard. There was a small section of the religious, grouping that decided to really politicize it. I think part of what was more disturbing that we need to really address is that if you have faith, this won't affect you. If you have faith, you can, everybody should be, hugging and kissing because faithful people won't get this. And that's, I think it's a kind of religious malpractice to put that out there and to make people unsafe. There's nothing that God requires of us that would make us be more prone to illness. So I think it's political, but it's also just a bad kind of theology.
How do you think this time can bring us to see, and I'm going to quote the kind of the least of these and do unto others, those messages that are familiar to those from the Christian tradition?
I am seeing a lot of people trying to do the right thing. I think that there is a real desire among religious people of all stripes to be there for one another. I know that the Muslim community is organizing, the Jewish community is organizing, making sure that the most vulnerable in our communities are cared for, given supplies, going out shopping for one another. I do feel like this is what it means to be a religious person. It also means that as a Christian leader, I'm reaching out to Muslim leaders and Jewish leaders and Hindu leaders and saying, how can we compound our efforts to make sure that we are meeting the needs of every single person in this city, whether they're part of our religious community or not? It makes no difference at all. We need to be serving everyone. And you know, religions have so much social capital. We have so many ways that we can get out messages around of how people can remain safe and also how people can serve in this. And we're going to need bravery and we're going to need intelligence. And so I see a lot of desire to do that. And over the next weeks, I think there's going to be even more mobilization in that regard.
What are some of the lessons that you think can be drawn from the resurrection story?
We will not be able to congregate in our sanctuaries as we normally think of them during Holy Week and Easter, and yet it doesn't mean that we don't practice them. I think that we have the opportunity to live out in ways that perhaps we haven't for decades, to live out the message of the gospel, which is that love is more powerful than death and passion more powerful than the grave, and we can be there for one another. We can show radical solidarity, just as Jesus showed it with us, and we can bring life, we can bring love to wherever we go. And so this is, you know, this is a time of brokenness and trial, but ultimately Christians are hopeful people because we saw the power that life will triumph over death.
You mentioned death. I want to ask you about advice that you have or your perspective on how we prepare to potentially grieve in isolation.
Mm. That is perhaps what will be one of the most bitter parts of this entire affair. There's no way that this will not sound maybe trite to the person who's going through grief, but let us remember the person's entire life, keep that with us. Their memories will live with us, and that there will be a time when we will be able to get back together and grieve with one another and hold one another and cry. I feel compelled to say that we don't want to jeopardize more lives to do that when we're still at risk.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share, or any particular hymn or scriptural passage or song or poem that gives you comfort?
For me, Psalm 139 is always where I go, which is that no matter where we go, God will be with us. The important thing right now is to remember that all of us are always loved. We are never alone. We are precious in God's sight. We matter, and that our lives are beautiful and sacred, and that even if we feel alone in our rooms, that we are deeply connected with one another through the power of love.
That was Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch, Baptist minister and the senior advisor for public affairs and innovation at the Interfaith Youth Corps, a national organization dedicated to diversity and religious cooperation. That's all for this week's episode. If you missed any part of the show or want to take another listen, you can stream this episode on our website at interfaithradio.org. You can also get the podcast. Just search Interfaith Voices wherever you listen. Inspired relies on the generosity of our supporters. Visit our website at interfaithradio.org to learn more about us, access our archive of past episodes, and sign up for our newsletter. If you have thoughts for an upcoming show or a reaction to what you heard today, I want to hear from you. Drop me an email at amber@listeninspired.org. If you enjoyed this episode, I want to ask you to take a second and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. This week's episode was produced by Kevin McCarthy and Kimberly Winston. We are grateful to our founder, Maureen Fiedler, and MC Yogi for our theme music. Remember, friends, we are in this together. So let's stay physically distant, but socially connected. Thanks for listening. See you next week.